From the beet fields of North Dakota to the National Forest Campgrounds of California to Amazon's Camper Force program in Texas, employers have discovered a new low-cost labor pool made up largely of transient older Americans. Finding that Social Security comes up short, often underwater on mortgages, these invisible casualties of the Great Recession have taken to the road by the tens of thousands in late model RVs, travel trailers, and vans, forming a growing community of nomads, migrant laborers who call themselves work campers. Jessica Bruder writes about these individuals in her new book, Nomadland: Surviving America in the 21st Century. Bruder's work as a journalist focuses on subcultures and the dark corners of the economy. She also teaches at the Columbia School of Journalism, and we welcome Jessica Bruder to the roundtable this morning. Jessica, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So I guess the best place to start is telling us what Nomadland is.
Oh, gosh. All right. That's a broad one. Basically, Nomadland represents a whole culture on the move that I think a lot of folks might not be aware of. It's a culture I came to be aware of when I was reading about people getting hired by Amazon warehouses who couldn't afford to retire and had moved full-time into RVs and were taking jobs all over the country. What I learned from following them was that there's a sprawling employment network of people hiring these folks and tons of people living in RVs and vans and sometimes sedans full-time. Many of them are traditional retirement age but can't afford to fully retire. And they're out there getting by, going from job to job. I had once assumed that whenever I saw somebody in an RV, this was a retiree with a fat pension just enjoying the sights and traveling around. And those people are still out there, but there's a whole new cohort out there because we've got flat wages and we've got rising housing costs. We've got retirement finance that's a total mess, and we have the aftermath of 2008. So I think particularly for older Americans, this has created a perfect storm in their financial world, and that's what we're seeing out on the road today.
So talk a little bit about that particular demographic. You write about it quite a bit in the book, that senior citizens are particularly hard hit when it comes to the effects of the Great Recession and ultimately their retirement years.
Absolutely. I mean, they don't have time to make it up. You know, there are people who took a hit who are still in their prime earning years and hopefully will be able to kind of climb back aboard. But, you know, for a lot of people who imagine retiring off the equity in their house, who imagined that their 401k would be stable, I mean, we've seen a trend in this country starting decades ago where pensions have been giving way to 401ks. So we used to have a system where the risk was on the employer's shoulders, and they were responsible for giving out a defined benefit. And now the risk has been outsourced to the employee, and that's been a disaster for a lot of people. So I think there were tons of catalysts during the Great Recession that pushed a lot of people out on the road, and just also for a whole other bunch of Americans, the fact that we're in a culture where there's a lot of ageism in the traditional workplace. And when you're making, you know, federal minimum wage, which is $7.25 an hour, it doesn't really leave you a lot to set aside to retire on.
I think that's one of the interesting things about the book is you talk, yes, that this problem exists, but also how barely these people are surviving. And that in and of itself is quite a story of how they are, what they're doing just to survive.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the people themselves are amazing. It's a really dark economic picture. But, you know, I met people who were doing 12-hour shifts at the sugar beet harvest. I met a gentleman in an Amazon warehouse who was working night shift, even though he's in his 70s and had spent his peak career years working as a mechanic in copper mines, and his knees were totally shot. So what people are doing to get by is pretty astounding.
This idea of nomads, men and women who have given up the stability and costs of a home life and hit the road. They hit the road in RVs, they hit the road in vans, they hit the road in trailers. And this is out of necessity, right? I mean, this is not something that is a growing trend out of a trend. It is necessity that drives this.
Yeah. A lot of people try to put a nice spin on it. There's a whole millennial branding thing right now called van life, which again is a brand, not a movement. But the bottom line is when you go out there and you talk to people, they will tell you this is a choice I made. And it is a choice. It's just a choice from a very, very narrow range of options. And I think it's something that a lot of people are not always comfortable talking about, because in the society we live in, there is a pretty corrosive culture of shame. We love telling people that if you haven't managed to, quote unquote, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, that you must be lazy, that it's your fault, that you're a bad person. And that's really quite ugly, because studies have shown quite the inverse. We're in a dramatically unequal society with very little class mobility and lots of liabilities, lots of precarity. But I think that shame is very much out there. And it's really frustrating, because shame is a great way to maintain the status quo, and it's a great way to keep people down. So I think that, yeah, a lot of people were pushed into this, but you also will hear people talk about choice quite frequently.
You talk to a number of people, obviously, and they are a very colorful lot, aren't they? They are interesting people. Tell us about some of them. Some of the people that stuck with me: Linda, a grandmother living in a trailer. She refers to as the squeeze in. Tell us about Linda and some of the other people that you met that made an impression on you.
Yeah, I mean, Linda's an amazing woman. She has worked so many jobs, from being a general contractor, being a long-haul trucker, a cocktail waitress, defeatherer of quails at a hunting lodge. She's been in the insurance industry. And, you know, coming up on her later years, she found that she was able to get less and less work at Home Depot, where she'd been a project manager. We did see some ageism in that she was only getting register jobs, even though her skill set really makes her a pretty formidable project manager. She couldn't even really get enough shifts to make a living, and she was paying $600 a month to live in a stationary trailer at a mobile home park, and realized that once she became eligible for Social Security as a lifetime low-wage earner, who had also taken time out of the workplace to be, you know, to do the unpaid labor of caretaking, which often falls on women's shoulders, she was going to be making about, you know, her benefit would be about $500 a month. That's not even enough to pay for the tiny trailer she was living in. So she realized that if she didn't want to be on that low-wage treadmill until she fell down dead one day, she had to do something a little bit differently. And that's how Linda ended up on the road. And I find her an absolutely formidable, resilient, creative human being.
These are people who really don't think a lot about the future other than they're living it, right? That this is what they assume they will be doing, as you say, until they die.
Yeah, I mean, people, it's funny, I've seen a lot of people on the right blame people on the lower end of the income scale for not having 10-year plans and not making the super good long-term choices. And it's quite a cruel outlook, because a lot of people really, you know, the day-to-day is challenging enough, it's pretty tricky to figure out what that long picture is going to look like, particularly when you're not in a position where you're able to earn enough of an income that allows you to put money away. So any sudden unexpected financial need can quickly become an emergency.
The idea of this as a problem and as what we're dealing with in this country, there certainly what we have experienced over the last year doesn't give us much hope that this will change anytime soon. I'm wondering where you, in investigating this phenomenon and talking to the people who've been directly impacted, if there is any, or, and if so, where the bright side is, where the hope is, where people can take some solace, something that they can take solace in, that future generations, future people entering their 60s and 70s, will not have to worry about this in the numbers that they're currently worrying about it.
Yeah, well, if we don't want people to have to worry about it, we need to shore up Social Security. Just the idea that Social Security is something that could be raided or dropped or privatized, I mean, it's disgusting to me. And I think Senator Warren has been a particularly powerful voice on that. There's a lot of other stuff going on, too. We have a president right now who keeps kicking the can down the road when it comes to implementing the fiduciary rule, the rule saying that people who are economic advisors should have to be legally bound to work in the best interest of their clients. And to me, that is such a no-brainer. I mean, would you go to a doctor who legally could sell one of your kidneys? I mean, of course not. And I just think that responsibility should be mandated. And I find it really, really distressing that that continues to be dodged by this administration. At the same time, we see all sorts of an ongoing crackdown on homelessness right now. And basically the idea of criminalizing people who can't afford to be in traditional housing. And I think that's pretty upsetting too. There are all sorts of municipalities that are now passing laws making it illegal for people to sleep in their cars. And that's basically saying, well, yeah, we've got this parking spot and your car is good enough to be there, but you're not. And as a culture, do we really want to, do we want to send the message that we value property over people? So I think if we want the next generation to have a better shot at this stuff, we need to start paying attention to these issues.
I mean, you tell a story in the book about people who will take stints working in national parks just so they have a place to park their camper.
Yeah, and a little bit of pay, but, you know, it's minimum wage or not much more in a lot of cases. And many of the people doing that kind of work told me, and I saw other accounts of it, and I actually received, when I sent a Freedom of Information request to the National Forest Service, all sorts of reports of how people are expected to work many hours and be on call at all times, and they can only file for a very short window of time. So I do feel that those workers are being exploited. And often, you know, people go to the campground and they see this nice older couple helping out. Well, that couple is also cleaning all the toilets, often three times a day, dealing with the rabbit campers, being woken up every night at midnight by people who are checking in late, shoveling out fire pits. I mean, this is really hard work, and often it's undercompensated.
The name of the book is Nomadland, Surviving America in the 21st Century. The book is published by Norton. Jessica Bruder, I thank you very much for spending time with us this morning.
And thanks for caring about this. It really means a lot.
Great pleasure. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Nomadland, Surviving America in the 21st Century. The book is published by Norton. The author is Jessica Bruder. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.